The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Wednesday. Gary, how the heck are you?
I'm doing great. We got a great show ahead. So much to talk about. A new poll out there. A majority of the voters in America thinks that Russia has dirt on Trump. We'll get to that. The Ninth Circuit Court ruling on the Second Amendment. You and I were just having a discussion on that just before we went on the air. Pretty amazing. It got lost in all the news out there
right.
A few years back, or if it wasn't that the news cycle moves so quickly, that would have been the story for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was huge news,
yeah.
Which really got lost in the shuffle today. Trump, the Playboy model, and the tape. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. A new study, sports destroys happiness. Okay, I can understand that from my point of view, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, technically, you never had the happiness, so you're not missing anything as a Bills fan.
Well, that's true, since I've never had it to begin with.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about as a Sabres fan? No?
No. No, happy, no happiness there.
Hmm. What about as a soccer fan? Sorry, I couldn't say that with a straight face. Sorry. Never mind.
Devin Nunes says, I don't blame the FISA judges. I think they were misled by the FBI. It's one of the questions that we had yesterday. We made sure that we qualified it and said, look, you know, we understand that Andrew McCarthy, for example, from National Review, looked and said, with everything going on here, you know, what were the FISA judge, you know, what were the FISA judge thinking? What were they thinking? And our point was, so much is redacted, you just don't know.
Jason Beal wrote about it at the Federalist, basically the same idea that, you know, the FISA judge, you know, we don't know enough about it, but we can take from it certainly that the FBI hid the source and of that information, of the dossier, and how it was paid for.
Oh, and by the way, I did see yesterday that you have some of the left coming out and saying, well, all the damning information about Trump is what's been redacted.
Okay.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Go with that.
Well, we said it yesterday. That's the only I found it amazing because we said the only defense that you can have, if you're looking at it from an investigative and or political point of view, if nothing has gone your way, for example, for the left on this, is the fact that all the damning information is what's been redacted.
It's
highly top secret. It's
so you can
make your case based on a lack of evidence.
Well, it's funny because I said when we played the audio cut from the interview between Stephen Colbert and the former Attorney General Eric Holder, and Eric Holder's answer was just, you know, flat out bizarre and false. But the better answer would have been, listen, the more important part is what's not, what we can't see, the redacted part, which I believe clearly would justify blah, 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 blah. That would have been the better answer than the one he gave. And now that's the one the left was using on Tuesday. Oh, see, that's the damning evidence. That's the stuff that's going to, you know, that's the stuff that's going to hurt, that is hurtful toward Trump. That's the proof or whatever it is. And we can't tell you because it's top secret.
Because it's so damaging.
Yes.
So that.
Okay.
The left is now crying that Americans have too many jobs. Is that true? More stats coming out on that one. Cord cutting jumps 30% in the last year.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I actually had the conversation with my wife, you know, and I said, I don't know. Here's the difference is you and I, if there's breaking news, we're going to have to rely on a number of things, news sources coming into the house. And of course that includes cable television, cable news, Fox News, CNN, whatever it is, you have to follow along with that. We have to do that. But otherwise, I don't know anymore. For pure entertainment purposes, I don't know that I would want to keep any of the channels that are on there. I mean, there's a few things that I like, but I don't know that I like them enough. I have not turned my TV on in days, except to watch a movie. I have not turned it on to cable, and I don't know how long. I mean, we turned it on and rented a movie, a streaming movie, and watched something the other night. My wife and I try and get a movie night in once a week, but I haven't turned it on to watch TV.
And you know
TV.
Something on the channels that really brought me to high def since I think it's been 2004 when I got my first high def TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that was things like the National Geographic Channel, Smithsonian Channel. I've seen all the shows.
Yeah.
I've seen everything. There's not enough new content to keep me there. In fact, one of the things that used to bring me there to a high-def TV was the different nature shows that they have. I forgot which channel. Maybe it's on the Smithsonian, Aerial America, where they basically fly over all the states, and now they're flying over the world. And it's really great because the scenery is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. But then I've realized I've seen the vast majority of them.
Right.
And then you look at the shows that I did like, and I still see it. You know, they're running marathons, for example, on American Pickers. I've seen every one.
Right. Yeah.
And it finally gets to the point. It's like movies. I really, in my 20s, into my 30s, I really didn't watch a lot of movies. It was in my late 30s where I started, you know, watching movies. I think I've seen all of them. I've seen everything that I wanted to see. Mm-hmm. There really are no movies that I wish to see.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are, there might be one or two new movies a year.
Mm-hmm. I want to see the new Mission Impossible.
Yes,
I want to see the next John Wick. I mean, these are just action movies that I've followed for years, and they're always great. But I can rent those. I can rent those with streaming.
And if Keanu Reeves comes out with The Replacements, too.
Clearly, that's on the must-watch list.
Not.
Yeah.
And so you when I look at it, and when it comes down really to sports. I've said this, and I never thought I'd get to this point as I get older. It's really amazing how little I care for sports now.
Yeah.
Where I used to, not that I don't like, I still get excited, for example, of watching college basketball.
Right, yeah.
But,
right, yeah.
You know, for the hockey fan that I was for the longest time, I just don't watch as much as I used to. I really didn't watch almost any of the playoffs for hockey this year.
Mm-hmm.
So college basketball a little bit, but it's really the only thing that I'm still left watching is golf.
Yeah.
For me, that's, and I don't know if that's just a sign of age, because I find football, you know, tremendously an exciting sport. I've always been since I was a kid. I was so passionate about it. It's like now it's like I don't care.
I don't know what has changed. I don't think it's all about the whole protest thing. That may be part of it with some people, and I know that's part of it with me. Except for the fact that if you were just to ask me purely about the game, watching the game, right? I haven't been the biggest sports fan in, you know, my life. I probably follow basketball closer, but I really don't even follow that anymore because I just simply don't have the time. And I think that's what it is. I think there's so many other distractions.
You know, for us, you know what it is? Maybe it's, I think about when I've really lost it, and it's been over the last decade or so. It's when I've been working this shift.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I really miss a lot of sports that happens during prime time.
Right. Then you realize
so many of the sports that maybe that's it. Maybe it's this shift.
Well, and I think for me, there have been a lot of things in recent years that have taken me away from, you know, if I ever had any television time, I'm spending it elsewhere. And I think that's what it comes down to. Not that there isn't quality entertainment. I mean, football is highly entertaining or whatever it is. There are movies out there that I'm interested in, but I can stream those as long as I have the internet. I don't have any issues there.
I do want to make this note here in this comment. I meant to make it last week when we were in the midst of 110 degree temperatures.
Yeah.
I did turn on one of the for 5 minutes one yeah. of the Hallmark Christmas in July movies that's been playing the entire month. They've been playing Christmas movies. I did catch 5 minutes of one, not for the Christmas theme, but it was cold and snowy.
Yeah, I actually did that. I watched a movie, an action movie with Jason Momoa. Is that his name? The guy that's playing Aquaman now, or the Merman, or whatever they call him. He was in this movie in that took place like in Alaska or something. I really did. It was an action movie, which was great. It's called Braven, and I rented it just to watch the snow. I didn't care about anything else.
Well, you think about where entertainment is going, and I think it's, and we talked about it last year, the cultural phenomena of the Hallmark Channel and what yeah. they've done, where they start playing Christmas movies now. They started playing it the last week of October last year. They used yeah. to just do a week in right. July, like Christmas in July.
Now they do.
They've gone the entire, because they have two Hallmark channels.
Right.
And they did 2 weeks of Christmas movies exclusively, 24/7 yeah, for right. 2 weeks on one.
Right.
And then the other one took over and they did another 2 weeks of it, a full month of Christmas movies in July.
Yeah.
And the only, why are they doing it?
Because it's working.
Because it's working and people are watching.
Well, my wife tunes in, and it's funny because we, you know, at Christmas time, we'll actually sit down and watch those movies. And they're very predictable, and so we actually, it's turned into a game. Okay, which one of the two in the couple, right, the couple that's going to get together, which one of the two hates Christmas?
Right.
One of them hates Christmas. And it's funny because she was watching one the other night, and I was, you know, getting ready for work, and I said, okay, he loves Christmas. He's a folksy guy. That guy right there, he's wearing a jean jacket, driving an old pickup truck. He loves Christmas. She's the city girl. She hates Christmas. She goes, nope, and, you got it backwards. The city girl loves Christmas. And, he hates Christmas.
But the beauty of it, but that's one of the things about Christmas. People, you know, when you get to that time of the year, people like the predictability. It's like when we talked about Trans-Siberian right. Orchestra, mm-hmm. when they wanted to change the entire show and they went back to basically the original show because people want predictability in that time of the year. But
and they want nothingness in the movie. They don't want anything too complicated.
Right, and that's actually the beauty that's the beauty of it. But all bad in Hallmark Christmas movies, all bad relationships always end around Christmas time, and the new fresh ones that will last forever
right.
always happen during the holidays.
Well, last year we watched one. My wife was recovering from surgery at Christmas time this last Christmas, and we were just hanging out watching these movies, and the one with Danny Glover, The Christmas Train,
yeah, I remember seeing it. Yep.
And you know, I thought to myself, that one's going to be successful, you know, because it had some marquee names in the whole thing, and I think that was the highest rated one of the season. We talked about it.
Well, yeah, we talked about it because that's when you had the left come out and say minorities aren't represented,
right?
And it's too pure. There's all these beautiful little towns, and that's when you brought up. You said
Danny Glover played the hero.
What are you talking about? The biggest movie on Hallmark Channel this year was with Danny Glover,
right?
And so then that sort of disappeared, and I'm sure it'll come up again. But I just thought it was interesting, just culturally. Mm-hmm. To see that, you know, that home, and they're doing it because it's working.
Right.
That they've gone now an entire month.
Yeah.
Now, the entire month of July, all Christmas movies, and the reason they're doing it is people may not promote that, oh, I'm addicted to it and I watch it all the time. But that's why they're doing it, because people are watching it.
How long before you can subscribe to streaming on one of those channels without having to have the cable?
You can now. There's an app, Hallmark Now, where you can rent you either pay per movie or you pay to get all the movies, and
have to have a cable subscription.
You
have to log in with your cable subscription.
Well, you may have to you might have to log into the cable subscription, or you can pay for it, because I think it's called Hallmark Now.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they've been promoting that also.
The point is that they're going to have to go where the traffic is, and if they don't have cable subscribers, they're going to have to go find that audience. That audience is online.
Yep.
So.
That coming up, plus Trump tariffs and making it fair for everyone. By the way, the president coming out yesterday And again, this is where I've said and you've said and we've said he's all over the place on tariffs. We don't know what the end game is. Mm-hmm. And we have said a couple of times he's come out and he'll say drop all, the goal should be drop everything, or he'll sort of imply it. In a tweet yesterday, here's what he said. The European Union is coming to Washington tomorrow to negotiate a deal on trade. I have an idea for them. Both the U.S. and EU drop all tariffs, barriers, and subsidies. That would finally be called a free market and fair trade. Well, actually, that wouldn't be fair trade that you've been promoting. That would be free market if you free dropped market. Everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so now, is this
much
Larry,
closer to unmanaged now, free trade?
Now, is this Larry Kudlow back in his ear? Now, this is the same day that he said, tariffs are great.
Mm-hmm.
So again, as we have said, please tell us and be consistent. Is that what your goal is? Because if that's what your goal is, I'm okay with that.
Sure.
If that's what your goal is. But I don't see it in the South Korean trade deal. I didn't see that in the Mexican deal that you're trying to get. I haven't seen that in any deal that the U.S. is trying to negotiate, including the European Union, which stated 3 months ago, and then Germany a month ago, that we have offered to drop tariffs. Mm-hmm. The president won't go for it. And then the Wall Street Journal article with the automakers going, we have no idea what he's doing and we don't like it. Well, because he's out there saying drop the 10%. Europe should drop the 10% tariffs on cars. And it's like the automobile, companies here are saying, no, because that means that we'd have to drop the 25% import tariff on trucks. No, we want that. We benefit from that in the United States. What are you doing?
Right.
And so that's the whole point. Would he drop the 25% tariff on trucks too? 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. We will get to all of the mandatory fluff news here in just a little bit, but really the news of substance, and that's what we also, when we have an opportunity, when it actually appears, we bring it to you. The liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals endorsed the right of individuals to carry firearms in public in a ruling on Tuesday, striking down a lower court argument that the Constitution only protects that right at home. Quote, analyzing the text of the Second Amendment and reviewing the relevant history, including founding-era treaties and 19th-century case law, the panel stated that it was unpersuaded by the county and state's argument that the Second Amendment only had force within the home, end of quote, the ruling states. From the Ninth Circuit,
that Ninth Circuit
of a that Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal, and the reason Trump's name was nowhere in that
exactly, otherwise it would have gone the opposite direction. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Record-setting high heat continues in the west. Las Vegas today will be at 114 degrees. The forecast high for Los Angeles, 100. Phoenix, 115. Nearing 100 in Portland. San Diego, 90. Five cities in the San Diego forecast area broke heat records, including Palm Springs on Monday, 119 degrees. And over the next 7 days, I don't show any rain for the state of Washington, Oregon, or most of California. Your 5 to 7 day rain totals put the majority of the moisture in Florida, the coastal Carolinas, up through the Delmarva Peninsula, into eastern Pennsylvania, and upstate New York. We'll see just around an inch of rain for the Midwest over the next 7 days, same for the South as well. Add Dallas to the list of cities with triple digits today, 102, Chicago 83, 80 in rain for New York City, a chance of rain in the Big Apple through the weekend. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
undeniably irrefutable. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I want to play this audio cut, and this is CNN playing. This is just part of the Trump-Michael Cohen audio recording, okay? And then they go into asking analysis, and they get to Alan Dershowitz. But I'm playing this because, you know, both you and I were asking the question during our pre-show meeting, and this is a question we ask on everything. I mean, when we talk about tariffs, and we say, what's the administration? What's the end game on tariffs? If it's Russia, North Korea, anything, we always ask, what's the end game? What is it all about? What does it mean? And they actually get to this point here on Cuomo primetime. And it's really what you and I said during our pre-show meeting. But here it is. And first you're here with a part of the actual, formerly secret tape. Mm. It's a CNN-obtained secret tape. It's not anymore. But here it is.
We need to listen. What finance?
We'll have to pay me. No.
All right. Are there potential legal issues with what you just heard? Let's bring in Cuomo's court now in session. Ken Cuccinelli, Alan Dershowitz, and Laura Coates. It's good to have all three of you. Laura Coates, I start with you. Your interest in this.
Well, you know, what you're seeing here is that Michael Cohen is very well aware that the gloves need to come off. It's a credibility campaign going on right now. And in a game of he said, he wants to prevail. Particularly, although it seems to people that the idea of whether he said cash or did he say check may seem like a very nominal matter. What he's trying to establish is that there was some awareness on behalf of Donald Trump at the time that there was this pending transaction, this agreement with Karen McDougal, and that he himself was trying to at least appeal to his good senses in some way, talking about no. And so I think you're seeing this all play out in real time, but certainly the gloves are off. And if you're Donald Trump, you're concerned that there may be additional information that his tape alluded to in the form of all the things in case David Pecker no longer is in charge of AMI.
Mm. Now, Alan Dershowitz, Professor, even if we take the reckoning of the recording as Lanny Davis, counsel to Michael Cohen, wants us to take it, which is, it wasn't Michael Cohen suggesting paying cash, it was Donald Trump. And Michael Cohen said, no, don't pay cash. And then Donald Trump said, fine, use a check. Relevance.
Well, first of all, I don't know why anybody waived the lawyer-client communication regarding this tape.
Gosh, yeah.
Here you have a lawyer and a client discussing something. The client
Rudy Giuliani
saying,
says it's because they think
cash.
It helps them.
Well, here you have the client maybe saying, let's pay cash. The lawyer says, no, do it by check. And the client comes back and says, I'll do it by check. That's a typical conversation. I've had that conversation a dozen times with clients. And you persuade them to do the right thing. But I think the big picture here is, number one, Lanny is a terrific lawyer. And so there is a real lawyer who is now against Trump, unlike Avenatti and some of the others, a really, really good lawyer who's on this case. Second of all, you have a situation where, you know, he's going to flip. There's no question. He's now made it clear.
Flip on what? He hasn't even been charged.
And so I know, but he's going to flip. He said he's going to tell the truth. He's going to cooperate. He's turned. He's pressed the reset button. If that doesn't mean that he's going to cooperate with the government, I don't know how you could say it any more than if you walked into the prosecutor's office and said, ask me any question you want me to ask.
But he says he has been cooperating. Hold on. Let me get to Ken in here. Let me get in here. I got three great minds. I want to use them all.
But he asked Dershowitz in the end if anything illegal was discussed on the recording. He goes, there's no crime here.
Right. What would be the crime?
And you and I were asking the same thing, except for being the president and sex and whether he paid somebody to be quiet. You and I always said with the Stormy Daniels, mm-hmm. The fact that, you know, he always claimed that he knew nothing about the payment whatsoever. And this was handled completely by the lawyer. We said it's a tough thing for anybody to believe. As for the left, I mean, this is something that they can use to say, you know, you have an immoral president there.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that, you know, you even see Cuomo. Cuomo's not on the attack here. It's almost like, okay, what's this about? Why are we here?
When Cuomo actually asked, flip on what? He hasn't been charged.
Right.
And we've asked that because right after the raid of Cohen's office. It started, well, he'll probably flip. He'll likely flip. Well, I would be asking Dershowitz or anyone else, what do you mean flip? Cooperating with authorities, like he's not going to cooperate? I mean, I don't know. Again, if you're saying he's going to flip, the question would be on what charge? And flip based on what charge against the president? That would be if Cohen is charged with something, he flips. He's trying to get a better deal for himself. To flip on what against the president?
Right.
That would be my question. What crime?
And what crime of Cohen?
Right.
Now you know, and so you look at this here, and it's like, okay, you have a secret tape. It is about sex, so it's newsworthy. But it was interesting because you and I were both talking during our pre-show meeting, saying, well, what is the end point here? And it was interesting to really find Andrew Cuomo, who's as far left as you can be, mm-hmm. asking the same question, sort of, what's the point?
Well, and you also ask the question, too, because you and I were throwing it around, what about the attorney-client privilege? Well, it turns out both parties in this case waived their designation.
Right.
So what happened was, is in the raid, those tapes, they got those tapes in the raid. There was a special master that was assigned to those tapes to see if they qualified for attorney-client privilege. And basically each party, including the president and Cohen, waived their designation for that privilege. And that's why Dershowitz is scratching his head here in this audio you just heard. Why in the world would you do that? And it's because they, reportedly, they believe it helps them. I mean, that's what Giuliani is saying.
Right.
They believe it helps the president. I really don't know if it helps the president
or
not.
All right, maybe that's why it's a story, is because nobody understands what's going on.
Well, it's almost as if, and we go back to what Colbert was saying to the former attorney general, Eric Holder, that, you know, it's almost like news tofu. You know, it takes on the flavor of whatever you put it in or whatever environment it's in. You know, and so people assign their own spin to it. First of all, that's nothing new. When it comes to political scandals, that's nothing new. But I don't see where it necessarily damages the president. I mean, what it does is that you're talking about an affair. We've known about the affairs. You can look at the number of marriages that he's had. And there are a number of, over the years, I don't know how many different, stories that have been out there about Donald Trump. So it confirms basically an affair that we already knew. The other part would be, all right, now what? What crime?
Right. And look, we said it back with the whole Stormy Daniels thing, but just overall, if you're running for president of the United States and you, your lawyer, whomever, are discussing making a deal to keep someone silent, when you become president, it's going to become known.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to hide, because it just does. You're the president of the United States. It's going to be known. So it's interesting that I've always thought it was fascinating that people will still run for president knowing that things like this will come out when they become president. Because you can't, he's not stupid.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, just that's not me.
Right.
If I had those kind of things in my, now I'm not going to run for president anyway, but if I had those things in my closet, I don't need to run for president.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to conduct myself, because I'd never be able to face my mom and dad. I'm not going to conduct myself in that manner, much less my children or anything else when in terms of an affair. That's just not going to happen. That's just not in the cards. But also running for president's not going to happen for a number of things, because people would question, well, anything and everything. They pick it apart, and you don't focus on, I guess, the job at hand. It's it is an interesting dynamic in a, well, back then, a 2016, or just in recent, I guess, the recent last couple of decades, it's all kind of gone away. This whole higher moral standard, you know, for people that we select for office, especially the president. I mean, it's just gone. Now, I would love to believe that there's that perfect person out there.
Joe Biden.
Exactly. The Maxine Waters. Clearly, she needs to run. But, I mean, I look at that, and even still, and you and I have said this before, it wouldn't matter who they are. I don't look to them to be my moral guide. I guess the difference would be is if, like, my pastor ran for president. Well, I look for him in a different capacity to be a moral guide. But I would not, even if there was that a candidate, what would you call it? I guess a clean candidate that were out there that ran, I'm still not looking for them to be my moral compass.
I just want to make clear, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright is not your pastor, right?
No, he is not.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
And has never been.
Okay.
Yes. I'm not saying he won't run, but he's not my pastor.
Wow. Let's start that rumor.
Well, exactly. Might as well.
We're going to go really far left.
ReverendWright2020.com. Let's see if that one exists.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red-Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, Devin Nunes stating yesterday that he doesn't blame the FISA judges. I think they were misled by the FBI. And I've noticed over the last couple of days, as all of this information has sunk in, that really the Democrats have been quite quiet, have they not?
Yeah. It's really interesting. It's just kind of gone back to the back burner, and it makes you wonder where it's going. I do find it kind of odd.
But like I said, the only defense I've heard is that, well, all the damning stuff on Trump is what's been redacted. Well, that's the only thing that you really can say in it. We had torn apart what former Attorney General Eric Holder said on Colbert and said no substance to what he said whatsoever. In fact, he outright lied about, what we actually know, what was redacted. I mean, he lied. He said that everything that Devin Nunes, in Devin Nunes' memo was shown not to be true. Everything.
Yeah, right.
That was a complete 100% lie from the former attorney general. I hope he runs for president.
Oh, I would love that. Absolutely love that. I don't, honestly, the question is there going to be any more information? Are those documents from the FBI ever going to be handed over? There's still tens of thousands of documents to be handed over. The only way that's going to happen, apparently, is if the president declassifies all of that. And I don't see any movement on that. I don't see, in fact, we heard over the weekend, we got word that that likely wouldn't happen, that he probably is not going to do that. Well, if that's true, that means those documents will never be handed over. So the next, I guess, move would be from Mueller. And we don't know when that would be.
And we don't, we don't even know if Mueller has even gone in the direction of looking at the FISA warrant.
No, we have no idea. Absolutely nothing.
Bimer New York did a opinion piece saying next step, House Intel asked Trump to declassify rest of FISA application. So apparently he's claiming that they're doing it again and trying to look at those specific pages again. He goes into some depth, and we'll get to that as to what might possibly be in those pages that they are still attempting. Because remember, they did it in, in June. The president said no. Then this came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're leading to the point and they believe, because from what I know, the reason that they're asking those pages to be unredacted is they know what's in there. They've
right,
read it.
Right.
It's only been unredacted to the public. They know what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the American people should know, too. The American public should know whether a administration spied and did not follow proper procedure, and they spied on an opposition campaign. Every American should be concerned with that. Problem is, every American isn't concerned with that.
Not at this point, they aren't.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. The president announced yesterday emergency taxpayer aid for farmers hurt by the tariffs.
All right.
Up to $12 billion. You and I were looking at the story yesterday, which showed we have a record amount of meat in freezers.
Yeah.
Because those foreign markets have gone away.
Right.
They're going to have to initially crash the prices. We saw what happened to the pork producers in Iowa losing this is over a month ago when this report came out. They'd already lost $500 million because their prices had to crash. Their prices will crash so they can get rid of what they have, and then they will skyrocket and production will go down.
Right. Red meat and poultry is the brunt of what's in the glut right now.
Exactly. And so the president has promised them $12 billion in taxpayer dollars because of the tariffs. Now, there's 2 points. First off, the president had a tweet yesterday where he was back to what he has said last time around North Korea. As we have said, he's been all over the place on tariffs. We have no idea what this administration wants because they won't be clear. I hope that what the president said yesterday, I hope that's where he's at, but there's no evidence that he is. And that is where he said that the European Union is coming in, and wouldn't it be a great thing to drop all tariffs between both nations? All tariffs, all subsidies, everything. Completely and totally free trade.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because the president has said he doesn't want free trade. He wants free trade, but fair trade. Now, he said dropping all the tariffs and dropping all the subsidies and dropping
and
barriers, which would be caps,
mm-hmm.
Is free and fair trade. Well, the fair traders would disagree with you on that, Mr. President.
Yes.
Because that would be free trade. And if that's what the administration would like to do, which is why we were excited when the administration hired Larry Kudlow and then the president moved in the opposite direction, we would love to see it. I don't see any indication by the evidence of the South Korean trade deal about what nixed the Mexico free trade deal, what nixed the Canada deal, that the periodically he'll say that as if he, okay, I know I have to say that, but it's not what I really mean.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't like about is the administration has not been honest from the very beginning on this. First off, it's not a national security issue. The tariffs are not about national security. They never have been.
Right.
To me, that's the biggest lie of substance that the president has had in this administration, because they've been all over the place. You and I said, I've said many times, because it's true. We have no idea what the president's end game is on this. What would be, now I hope it's what he said yesterday, but he has said that a few times and then moved on and talked about the fact that it's not free trade. We need free and fair trade. Automobile companies, again, a few articles written on that. They have no idea where the president's going. They don't want to change. The president rails against the 10% tariff on automobiles, American automobiles, going into the European Union. He has railed against that. What he has conveniently forgotten is the 25% tariff that the United States puts on European trucks coming into this country to protect a more lucrative market in automobiles, which is trucks. And so again, we don't know. Industry doesn't know. The farmers can't figure out what he's doing. The meat producers can't figure out what he's doing. The pork producers can't figure out what the end game is. And that's so important in trade. Mr. President, what is your end game? Because you can give all the subsidies you want to the pork producers, to the farmers, whatever. If the international community and the supply chains view the United States now as an undependable supply chain, because, hey, we don't know. We thought everything was fine. Next thing you know, the president's putting tariffs on. We don't know what the president wants in the long term. The administration is not clear on what the end game of trade, what they want. We can't trust the United States. We're going to get our supply chain from somebody else. Once you lose that supply chain, as the pork producers of Iowa said, it took us decades to get into this supply chain. And if we lose it, it will take us decades to get back into it.
Mark Bitzer's the CEO of Whirlpool and issued a statement on Tuesday that the cost of their raw materials, they're based in Michigan, by the way, and that's key because that's one of those states that the president would love to maintain in 2020. They had, at the beginning of the year, they had said raw materials for 2018 would be roughly $200 million, and it jumped to $350 million as of yesterday, he believes, will be the cost of their raw materials for all of 2018. So that's $150 million added to the cost of raw materials. The articles that I saw in that story didn't, they did focus on the tariffs, but the math isn't there to support that kind of jump. My question would be, what is it that is costing, you know, if you're looking at a 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum, and you're jumping from $200 million for the year at the beginning of the year, that was the prediction, and now it's $350 million. Is there a greater demand that you believe you're going to take in? Is it the same amount of raw materials? And that cost for those, that same amount is going to increase by that much. There's still information that I'm trying to learn. Nonetheless, there is an impact on those, you know, those manufacturers, and we knew there would be. And that's going to be the case with many manufacturers. I mean, if you look at the cost of raw materials goes into everything. So if you're looking at the cost of, transportation, big rigs, anything that is going to use the raw materials, and they all do, in the making of the equipment to produce on the line to make the trucks that are going to transport the end product, it has a compounding effect, the tariff does. And so when that raises, when their transportation costs raise, then their raw materials costs are going up. That is a compounding effect. And that ultimately is going to hit the consumer. And the problem is that there's only so much you can do. It's like what Harley Davidson was talking about, that their bikes overseas, they didn't believe they could add that amount to each bike and pass that on to the consumer. They didn't believe the market would bear that.
$2,200, yeah.
Yeah, so over $2,000 per bike more, they said was likely not going to be doable. They can't pass that along because they don't believe the market will bear that, that the consumer won't bear that cost. So they have to absorb some of that. Well, then that gets into the losses department.
That gets into the loss, right? There is no free lunch in,
right.
Here. That it doesn't matter whether the company eats the cost and they lose the profit. That affects
right.
the economy the same way.
Right,
but
right.
that's also the incentive to move production overseas too.
Yes,
that's why they had to accelerate their investment in overseas in order to produce the bikes. Now, once they're over there, are they going to come back? Once they produce and get that supply chain over there, do they come back to the United States where they were producing those bikes? No.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that you have. You lose the supply chain. The point that I have never understood and the administration doesn't explain it is, if China is the problem, what we should be doing is uniting with the trade partners that we've always had. If your goal is truly to have absolute unfettered free trade, the president should have been clear on that from the very beginning. Has he ever been clear on that? Has the president been clear that I'm about complete and total dropping, as he said yesterday in the tweet? It's almost as if they want to cover we're going to cover in every speech and every base, or in every tweet and every speech, we're going to cover every base. We're going to say we're for free trade. We're going to say we're for free and fair trade. We're going to say we're for fair trade.
Well, his tweet on Tuesday, you know, tariffs are great, and the end of that same tweet, all will be great. You know, parties
right.
are talking, you know, he implied that negotiations are going on. My question would be, what are you trying to get?
What are you trying to get? We have no idea what they're trying to get. And then, like I said, the tweet that came later on mm-hmm. in the day was, here's an idea with the European Union coming over for trade talks today, would mm-hmm. be today, is let's drop all the tariffs, all the duties, all the subsidies, all the barriers.
Right.
Well, you've already, the European Union said 3 months ago, this April, early May, we offered that to the administration. We'll drop all, they weren't interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the president, who is very quick to react to anything he perceives as fake news, the administration never commented on that. Never saw a comment on that. Then when Germany came out and said the same thing, look, we're willing to drop all these, you know, all these tariffs, the administration doesn't seem to be interested in it. So
right.
what is the end game? Where is the clarity and the consistency of what you want? But if it's fair trade that we want and fairness for everybody, where's our subsidies?
Oh, where does the consumer get paid?
Where's the subsidy for the person who's going to have to pay more? Now, what is it now? 19-20% more for a washing machine if you mm-hmm. want to get it. Where's the tax rebate for the American consumer? Why does if it's about being fair, and that seems to be the big thing from the fair traders, it needs to be fair. Well, what about being fair to the consumer and the taxpayer? Why does the taxpayer and the consumer have to eat the costs of higher costs, for example, for washing machines that are up, you know, from the beginning of the year, roughly 19-20% because of the tariffs, and then also have to bail out the farmers because of the tariffs put on by the president? Where's right. the bailout? Where are the tax incentives? How come it's not fair for the consumer? If we're about fairness, where's the fairness for the consumer? If you're about fair, then let's be about fair.
Yeah.
We can play the populist economist too. Let it be fair for everybody. Why is the poor guy, why is somebody who is in poverty hurt the most by the tariffs? Where's the fairness for them? Let's be fair. Fair is where it's at, so let's be fair.
Well, because my question is, what's his definition of fair?
What's the definition of anybody's fair? That's the whole, I saw it yesterday, the debate again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's about being fair, which means what? Well, you know, not getting screwed by the other countries, which means what?
Well, fair is defined by two different parties, but the problem is it's decided by two different parties, but here's the problem. You're deciding for me because you're talking about the goods I will consume.
Right. You're interfering with my ability to buy a product at a fair competitive price, because
right.
competition's out of it once tariffs hit.
Right.
And if you're looking at the unfair trading practices of China, then you should be getting together with Europe, Canada, Mexico, all the countries that you have experienced trade agreements with and are attempting, if that's your goal, to even knock down more barriers. You should be knocking down more barriers with all of those countries instead of looking at them as trade enemies.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the point that the president talks about. If the president talked about yesterday that tariffs need to go between both, that all the tariffs need to go between the United States and Europe, as he said, which would be free trade, then that means a trade deficit will go up, not down. The United States, a trade deficit will go up, which he claims he's against the trade deficit.
Does that fit within his definition or parameters of fair?
Well, the president is, I mean, he'll say one thing, but then the next day he'll say something else. Like, we have to stop this trade imbalance. Well, if then you're saying in the tweet it's complete and total free trade, well, then our trade deficit's going to go up, not down.
Right. If it's going to be as close as you can get to unmanaged free trade, you're going to have deficits.
When you're hurting farmers, when you're hurting U.S. manufacturing, you should be honest with the American people and tell the American people what you want. And the president has not been honest with the American people, and he will not explain to the American people precisely and consistency what the end goal is. That's reprehensible. Tell us where we're wrong. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, finding available loads is easier than ever with the app from DrayNow. Mike Albert is the CEO of DrayNow and has more.
Well, we started DrayNow to give them access to freight that is a niche in the transportation industry that usually truckers aren't very familiar with. Typically, in the intermodal industry, truckers don't have visibility or access to this type of freight. Drivers choose what they want, when they want, to suit their personal lives. We really focus on short-haul movements. Our average haul may be 140 to 150 miles. We give them localized freight they can choose every day. They can do one, two, or even three loads in a day, where most load boards don't have that. The days of drivers talking about gross revenue really need to become a thing of the past, in my opinion. It's okay making $4,000 or $5,000 of gross revenue a week and using less fuel. It's more about what you put in your pocket. We have a simple vetting process where carriers enroll with us. Once they do that, they have access to the freight. There's no cost to the app. You go to our website, which is www.draynow.com, and click on the carrier tab. That actually starts the process.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get to that Devin Nunes cut where he says he doesn't believe it's the FISA court judges. He believes that they were misled by the FBI. And plus I want to get into the whole thing about the FISA warrant, where Democrats are saying now, or some like others are saying, not just Democrats, but others are saying, well, so much has been redacted that there are probably other things that they were looking into, but all those have been redacted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's why Devin Nunes is calling, we'll unredact them.
Right.
We'll keep sources and methods out of it, unredact the other evidence that you claim may be there that is redacted.
Let's see that.
Let's see it.
Let the American people see it.
And so Nunes is still calling for the president to do that now.
Yep.
And I know that the article came out that the president has refused, but maybe now that part of it has come out, the president made. The problem is that then he'll be accused of cherry picking, which is why Nunes and others say, no, unredact the whole thing. Keep sources and methods. You know, you can't unredact the entire thing, but all the explanation of what happened.
Right.
And that's what they're looking for. They understand, keep sources and methods still top secret, but there's enough out there so the American public without revealing any top secrets can understand the full case of the warrant against Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Do Democrats want that or not? And if not, why not?
It's, are we supposed to keep everything secret and not get anything done? Because if this becomes a case against Trump or any of his associates, staffers, cabinet members, campaign associates, then that case will become public. So we'll be learning then. Why not learn it now? I mean, clearly you believe the president is guilty if you're on the left. Someone associated with him is guilty. There's proof of that.
Right. The defense now is that the unredacted portions are what the truth is. Well, the Republicans are saying unredacted so the American public can see.
Let's see it.
Are Democrats behind us?
Do-gooder tough guys, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. All right, here's Devin Nunes on Monday night on with the Laura Ingraham on Fox News about the FISA judges. Here we go.
Yeah, I don't blame the judges. I think the judges were misled.
You don't think they should have asked more questions? I mean, if I saw,
well, it's hard to say
that
now.
That was a prominent, forget saying if it was the majority of the case to open up this warrant. But if I saw political opposition, I would have asked more questions. Who is this political opposition?
Well, sadly, we don't. Yeah, you should have asked that. But also, sadly, we don't have any transcripts, so we don't believe.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, I think they were misled. I think it was deliberate that the source of the dossier and how it was funded was certainly the fact that that was hidden was deliberate. I can also believe that the judges maybe should have asked the question or several questions, but we don't know what they did and didn't ask about that and what they were told.
I just find this interesting because sometimes we'll say something and all of a sudden the next 24 to 48 hours, it's what the left starts using. Because we had said on yesterday's show, we said, look, the only case that you can make, and this is looking at it from an investigator's point of view and not a partisan point of view. But if you're trying to get to the truth of what happened from an investigator's mind. And I said, the only thing that you could say is, well, OK, the highly redacted portions of it are what contain the absolute evidence that Trump did it. Because how can you argue that? But it's also something as an investigator, if you're looking at it, you say, I don't have the whole piece of the puzzle here. I've only got what's been redacted. I don't know here. So I can't make an absolute judgment here, even though I can see from what was redacted that obviously they used the dossier and the newspaper article in the unredacted portions of it. That's what you get. That was the vast majority of what was used to get that warrant. Anything else has been redacted. Well, yeah, that's where the stuff might be.
Right.
And it says, defenders of the FBI, this is Byron York, Washington Examiner, defenders of the FBI began to argue that the blacked out portions contain the truly powerful evidence that supports their position.
Yeah, right.
Quote, there is clearly information the government provided separate and apart from source one, Steele, and open source info. And the fact that all the paragraphs are redacted, all those paragraphs are redacted, suggest supporting info from other sensitive methods and sources, tweeted CNN commentator Aisha Rangapapa, a lawyer and former FBI agent. And as Byron York writes, it's a point that is impossible to assess as long as the application remains heavily redacted, which is why House Intelligence Committee Chairman Representative Devin Nunes. The man most responsible for bringing the application to light in the first place is asking President Trump to declassify the rest of the warrant application. We want the president, this is a quote that he had on Laura Ingraham, we want the president to take care of the rest of these redactions so there was full transparency and sunlight for everybody to see.
Mm-hmm.
By taking care of the redactions, Nunes and others mean maximum, not total declassification. Most agree that there would be some small core of information regarding the FBI sources and methods that should remain blacked out. But that would be a tiny part of the application compared to the redactions in place today. Nunes and other House Republicans have been asking for declassification for months. On June 14th, all the Republican members of the Intelligence Committee wrote to the president declaring, because Department of Justice and FBI continue to obstruct the committee's investigation, it is time to put the facts in the open public domain, consistent with the need to protect intelligence sources and methods. While the lawmakers support maximum declassification, they also gave the president another option to classify two key sections of the applications that Republicans believe are particularly revealing. In the letter, the GOP committee members made that very special request. The problem with that, as he points out later on, they'll be accused of cherry picking by the Democrats.
Right.
As we had said earlier on, that's what they would accuse it. So fine. Since now part of it's been released, which favors Devin Nunes, the Republicans are stating, or excuse me, Democrats and others are stating, well, the real information is in the redacted form. And we can't see it, well, then I'm sure all Democrats would be for then opening all of that up so we can see what's in there without revealing the sources and methods, but revealing what other evidence they have on Donald Trump, because the Democrats and those favoring the Democrats are stating it's likely that the real damning stuff on Donald Trump is the stuff that's been redacted. So, are Democrats behind us in opening up and having more transparency about what the FBI was actually investigating with Donald Trump?
If you believe it's damaging, then let's see it. If it's damaging to the president, then so be it.
And I know what we will get again. We will get crickets.
Yep.
Why?
Make it last long enough to get through the election.
Well,
this is what we have said from the beginning. The whole thing is about creating the shadow of a doubt.
Why don't Democrats want the truth and transparency to come out? You consistently say, as you're saying again now, that, well, the unredacted part contains the other part that, you know, really would justify the warrant to be. Well, then fine. Open it up. Let's see it. We don't care which direction it goes. We just want the truth.
Whatever's happened has already happened.
Right. We want the truth. Why don't you want the truth? Why don't you want transparency? Why are you against the truth and transparency, especially when the Democrats are using the redacted portion as their evidence that there's still suspicion against Trump? Well, then fine. Redact it so we can find out. Unredacted, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Not redacted.
Let's see it.
Unredacted.
Let's go.
And there's no cry for Democrats to do that at all. None. Zero. You have to ask yourself the question, why?
Because if you get to the point where the president declassifies this, to the point, again, they said maximum level, not completely, then... And have Director Wray, and this is how it would happen, likely. You would have the FBI director, you would have probably Devin Nunes and the president all sit down and look to see how much can be redacted, how much can be declassified, unredacted. So there's the situation. Why isn't the left screaming about this? Why haven't they been screaming about the tens of thousands of documents that haven't been handed over by the FBI yet?
Right.
Why isn't Adam Schiff screaming for that?
Well, look right here. There's what poll is this here? The Quinnipiac University National Poll. By a 51-35% margin, U.S. voters are convinced the Russian government has dirt on Trump. Well, then let's find out.
Right.
The way we can find out is what the FBI has been looking at. That's where you'd get your evidence, correct? From what the FBI has done. If 51-35% margin believe it, then why aren't the Democrats screaming for transparency from the FBI?
I mean, so everyone on the left should be screaming for that. And right now, the lead scream, the top scream, should be coming from the top Democrat on the House Intel Committee.
Right.
Adam Schiff.
And it's not.
Why not? He keeps saying he has proof.
The majority of Americans believe Russia has dirt on Trump. Well, how would we find that out? Let's start finding out what the FBI knows.
We're just going to keep it in a vault?
Right.
I mean, this is your shot at removing him from office.
Yes.
Democrats. You want him gone. This is the legitimate way to do it. He's clearly broken the law.
Well, unless, as Eric said, no, they actually don't, because they don't have confidence and they just want to keep the narrative going. I can't believe that
through
that would
November.
Be the point, that they just want to keep the
so
narrative
disingenuous. I just can't
going
anybody
of the suspicion saying, no. Look, the majority of American voters believe the Russians have dirt on him.
Yeah.
They're always suspicious that he colluded with it. We don't want the evidence to come out to show that he doesn't, because we want to win elections. We actually don't wish to know the truth.
No.
Is that it? Mm. I can't believe that.
No, that would be.
I can't believe the Democrats
would
wouldn't want to know the truth.
That would be wrong. That would be disingenuous.
And would be for transparency.
Right.
I always hear the Democrats are for transparency.
Right. And truth.
And truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, the left, especially.
Yeah, that's what I think of
we
first.
Want honesty and accountability in government.
Mm-hmm.
That's Ocasio-Cortez.
Right.
That's part of her socialist saying, clean up the government.
Right.
Well, then fine, we need to know. If
right.
we got a dirty government, let's find it out.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Democrats, do you stand by Ocasio-Cortez or not? She is demanding.
That's right.
Transparency. She is demanding a clean government.
That's out with it. Come on. You're the party of truth and transparency, right? Shine the light on the monster that is Donald Trump. Come on. You got your shot.
It's your chance to impeach the monster.
They're all carrying torches, marching up to the castle. Come on.
I'm just picturing in my mind doing Theater of the Mind.
Yeah.
A Frankenstein with a Trump head.
Frank and Trump. Yeah.
Frank and Trump.
Singing Putin on the Ritz. Sorry. I have to go to comedy right away.
Oh, no.
But because if you're not screaming for it, then you know, and you know everybody else on your side believes the whole thing is bogus.
Right.
Otherwise, you'd be screaming for it.
You're being disingenuous. Mm-hmm. You don't want truth. You're
right.
not seeking truth.
You just
you're
want
not
this
seeking
thing to play out until
you're
the
not
election.
seeking integrity. You're not seeking for transparency. Everything that you claim is bull.
Yep.
Tell us where we're wrong. 866 or right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks, Brian, for this story. I actually did see it and didn't bring it up, and Brian gave us his story, so I must talk about it because
all right.
Brian must have been a little bit peeved that we didn't talk about this yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Nude man caught working out at Planet Fitness thought it was a judgment-free zone. Police say a man who was caught naked in a Planet Fitness mm-hmm. thought he'd get away with it because the gym considers itself a judgment-free zone.
Right.
Officials said. Eric Stagno was arrested on Sunday at a gym in New Hampshire, where gym goers allegedly caught him exercising in the nude. The police captain said police were dispatched to Planet Fitness location after receiving a call from witnesses that said the guy walked in, stripped down right in front, left the clothes and belongings at the front desk, walked back and forth across the gym a couple of times, then settled in over at the yoga mats. This is why Brian gave it to me, because he wanted both you and I to do Theater of the Mind.
Yeah.
The police captain added that Stagno was in a yoga type pose when authorities arrived.
Nope.
Police said that Stagno thought it was a judgment free zone, apparently referencing the gym's slogan.
Yeah.
Gym goers reported feeling sick, unsafe, and disgusted by Stagno's actions. He was taken into custody without incident.
Well, what are you going
to
do?
And charged with indecent exposure, lewdness, and disorderly conduct, according to the news outlet. He was reportedly released on $1,000 bail. So apparently it wasn't a judgment-free zone if they gym goers felt sick, unsafe, and disgusted.
Now, I know protocol is to frisk any suspect before taking them into custody, or when you take them into custody. I'm guessing that was not necessary. I'm just guessing. I mean, that's when you need a lasso. If you're a police officer, that's when you need.
I can't wait to hear the guy's explanation in court. You know.
Yeah.
I was high.
Right, or something.
Because there's no way that anybody actually believes that you could do that, because they their slogan is.
Or he's just some kind of stupid jokester.
Yeah.
You know, he's playing off the Planet Fitness, you know, mantra, which is
right
again, judgment free zone. Trust me, people are judging. They were judging him.
Oh, yeah. They were judging.
But they judge every day.
Yes.
Trust me, they do. Not out loud.
The
they
slogan
judge.
Is a lie.
Exactly.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. It's always great when you get an example which really defines a particular phrase or word for you, where you say, I now fully understand the meaning of that phrase and word. And the phrase or word that I'm discussing here is the term known as a blowhard. Right. We've heard that this person is a blowhard. And I found an example of it from this audio cut.
Right.
I have this audio cut from Senator Cory Booker talking about Judge Kavanaugh. Judge Kavanaugh and the supporters of Judge Kavanaugh. Now the audio isn't that great. So you can understand it, but it's often a little bit of a distance. This was Cory Booker on Capitol Hill. You can see that Elizabeth Warren is right behind him. Among others, and they're talking about Kavanaugh and people who support Kavanaugh. Here we go.
There is so much at stake here. This has nothing to do with politics. This is to do with who we are as moral beings. And so I want to call on everybody. I'm not here to tell folk just what they should know. I'm here to call on folk to understand that in the moral moment, there is no neutral. In a moral moment, there's no bystanders. You are either complicit in the evil, you are either contributing to the wrong, or you are fighting against it. There's a saying from the Abraham faith in one of the Psalms that says, yea, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death. We are walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't say, though I sit in the valley of the shadow of death.
Well, now.
It doesn't say that I'm watching on the sidelines of the valley of the shadow of death. It says, I am walking through the valley of the shadow of death. It says, I am taking agency, that I am going to make it through this crisis. And so I am calling on everyone right now who understands what's at stake, who understands who Kavanaugh is. My answer says, if someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. He has.
There you go. Definition of blowhard right there. Cory Booker. Complicit in evil?
Based on what about Kavanaugh?
I don't know. He doesn't state it.
I mean, demonstrate the evil.
It's blow.
Identify it.
It's blowhard rhetoric is what it is.
Right.
It means nothing. He says nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He explains nothing. I've never heard Kavanaugh believe what people say. Have you ever heard Kavanaugh say that he's complicit in evil?
No.
No? Neither have I. He said, listen to what they... I've never heard Kavanaugh state that. I've never heard any of his supporters state that they believe that he's complicit in evil.
Yeah, I don't know where the example is.
Yeah. Give
Love
me,
to hear that. Demonstrate that.
Give me the example. Cory Booker, do us the courtesy of what I know is expected out of us on our little show, which is we just can't throw out the accusation. We got to back it up.
Right.
We got to back it up consistently every single day, 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. And we can't get away. We can't get away with not doing that once or we get called on it.
I just would like, again, a very, very basic explanation as to what you're referring to.
Yes.
On the part of Mr. Kavanaugh. Let's hear it. Is it just because you say it? Say it and it becomes true?
Yep.
Yeah.
There's so much at stake here. It has nothing to do with politics. This has to do with who we are as moral leaders. And in that moral moment, there is no neutral. Where's the morality?
Where is the absence of morality on the part of Mr. Kavanaugh?
Yes. Those that support Kavanaugh, how are they complicit in evil? Be specific. Cory Booker can't be specific. Why? Because when you're in the midst of a blowhard statement, you can't be specific.
It's very simple to start with an explanation. Here's why the guy is bad.
Yeah.
Right?
It's what we would do.
Right.
If we would say that somebody is complicit in evil, we would explain specifically why.
If I call them a liar,
we would explain
and tell you why
they are a liar.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. I just I had to play because I actually was laughing through it before.
Well,
and that's all I could think of. I was like, wow, he is a blowhard. If it's the that's the only thing I think of when I heard that. I'm like, wow.
Right, right.
Because when you use rhetoric like that, and when you bring God and you quote the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And but you don't explain.
Because now you're getting into real territory as far as I'm concerned. Which means you really have an obligation at that point, I believe, to explain yourself, to explain why. Make the case.
Yeah.
If you can't, it's probably best to move on. But I would really like to hear you make the case.
And by the way, it was Elizabeth Warren, one of the
Yeah.
Warren was one of the uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it when liberals turn to the Bible.
I am I am telling you, how long, if anybody's been a long-time listener to the show, you know we've probably said this, I don't know, maybe since 2006 when the left just said, okay, yee-haw, we've got Congress back, we can just do whatever we want and say whatever we want.
Right.
But for the longest time, it's never been easier to attack the substance of the substance or the lack of substance of the left.
No, I think if you
never been easier.
If you again,
not anytime
break it down, I don't know why that is. I mean, I don't know what changed. Is it that the new liberal generation doesn't care or doesn't believe they have to explain it? I would really like to know what the strategy is. You get back to the Obama years, the early Obama years, when he was a state legislator, and you talk about the whole community organizer thing. What was that about? That was finding a way and developing a system that would get people to the polls. And they did it. He applied that in 2008. He reapplied it in 2012, and it worked. So I understand, and while on major issues, he really was very, very empty and had really no substance, that didn't matter. Was that the end of it? I mean, was that the closing of the door of the debate? The ushering in of Barack Obama as president? In that you really didn't have to. I mean, if hope and change gets you there, you have just proven you don't have to have a debate. You just have to look cool.
And by the way, I believe we're fair across the board. If you listen last hour's show, where we attack the whole concept of fair trade, or where the Trump administration is going with trade, where they won't explain it.
Right.
That's the same kind of thing. The Republicans will do the same thing occasionally.
Oh, yeah.
Seen the president do it on, explain to me what you mean.
Right.
We've said it all the time. Well, I want fair trade, which means what? How would you put that into action? Slogans don't work with us. Buzzwords don't work with us. We want explanations about how you plan to make things work.
And if it's a good thing, why are you handing out $12 billion to farmers?
Right.
That's my money, and you're controlling my choices in the meantime.
Right. And so we're going to ask the tough questions when people use rhetoric or words. We're going to confront you on it. Just because you're in government, or just because you're president, or just because some people practice political idolatry, we don't.
No.
We demand answers, and we demand explanations, especially if it's a policy that Democrats are proposing, or it's a demonization that Democrats are enacting against a totally, from what we know, completely, totally moral human being of Judge Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to call you on it to be specific, and if you're not, we're going to call it what it is. The same way we'll do it with the president when he will not explain what his trade policies are or what the end goal is. And when we use buzzwords or phrases instead of specifics to explain what we wish to do, we dislike and abhor both, irrespective of which side it comes from. It's wrong.
It's the same behavior.
It's the same behavior. Different issues, same behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that simple. And if you see, most of the time when we agree with somebody, it's because they've explained specifically what they wish to do, and we understand it completely.
Yeah. Well, tell me what was hard about the explanation and the goal of lowering taxes.
That was explained very well by the president.
Lowering corporate taxes. All of these things that have been very easy to explain.
Very easy to explain.
Not that tough.
No.
Oh, by the way, just one more thing on the left. We talked yesterday about Ocasio-Cortez talking about the fact that the only reason that the unemployment rate is low is because so many people have two jobs, and it was like she was immediately called out saying, you don't even know how the unemployment rate is figured out. But then it was, you know, a couple of days later, Elizabeth Warren comes out and talks about, well, the economy isn't doing good because people are working two, three, and four jobs. Just reiterated again, we gave you the stats, Wall Street Journal op-ed piece, Andy Putzer, in his commentary. He's a former CEO of CKE Restaurants and author of The Capitalist Comeback. Does everybody have two jobs? A critical look actually at it. And as they found out, no, as he writes in here, are people working 60, 70, 8 hours a week? Rarely. But for a brief dip during the recession, private sector employees have worked an average of 34.2 to 34.6 hours a week since the Bureau of Labor Statistics began tracking the data back in 2006. The average stood at 34.5 hours in June. When you look at it overall, 5% of working Americans since 2010 have been working two jobs, and most are one job and a part-time job. It was higher before 2010. Last month, 4.9% of the 155.5 million working Americans had multiple jobs. That would be 7.6 million. So, again, it's actually less than what it was if you look like previous to 2010. So that's not the problem. But again, that's rhetoric that's used, and of course, we corrected it once, and since we were just talking about Elizabeth Warren again and Ocasio-Cortez just a few moments ago, figured we'd bring up more statistics on it that was in that op-ed piece.
Yeah, we were wondering if Bernie or somebody would come out and up it again. Six, seven, eight jobs.
Six, seven, eight jobs, right. That's but no, it's incorrect. And that's where we are. That's where we stand now with the left. The vast majority now, almost everything with the left, is not debating the issues with them anymore. It's fact-checking.
Right.
No, that's not how it is. No, that's not how it is. No, that's not how it is. No, that's not reality. I wish it was different. I wish we could actually have a debate, but can't have debates anymore. It's fact-checking is what it's become.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara. All right, let's get to the only important news out there. There was a Mega Millions winner.
All right. I didn't know it had grown to, like, what'd you say it was?
522 jackpot, one-time cash option of $308 million. The winning numbers drawn Tuesday night were, you know, I don't like doing this, even if I'm reading it from the CBS News.
Because people could get it wrong.
If you ever get it wrong.
Yeah. Look, just go to megamillions.com or whatever.
Yeah, go to megamillions.com and check it out.
Yeah, you check your own ticket. We don't want to confuse people.
The ticket was purchased at Ernie's Liquors in San Jose, California. So if you take the one-time cash option of $308 million, if they did on that ticket, at Ernie's Liquors in San Jose, $308 million is currently worth $502.
Yeah.
With the cost of living.
But that will get you a lot of scratch-offs.
Yes. So, in addition, 8 tickets matched the 5 white balls to win the game's second prize, 6 worth $1 million each, were sold in Arizona, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, 2 in New Jersey, 2 sold in Texas and in Massachusetts and Texas.
All right, then.
Including the optional mega plier. All right, this is getting too complicated for me.
Okay, so there's a mega plier, and the mega plier does what?
Yes.
Okay, according to the website, it would be, in this case, 3. So if you won the $1 million prize, you get $3 million. It doesn't apply to the grand prize, though. But it looks like one winner in our state won the secondary prize.
Yes.
hit the mega player, so they got $3 million instead of one.
The average American spends about $200 a year on lottery tickets.
As usual, I'm below average.
Though residents of some states spend far more. Now, remember, that's taking the amount spent on lotteries and spreading it around with people that never play it at all, right? That's the average.
Yeah, right.
That would be the average. Here's how much is spent on lotteries. Here's a number of Americans. Boom, there's the average.
Yeah, okay. Wow.
That's how you would do it, right?
Yeah.
According to a study by other states, spend far more. Study by LendEDU, the average Massachusetts resident, average, spends $735 annually on lottery tickets. Rhode Island, $514 a year. Delaware and New York, $400 a year or $33 per month.
Wow.
Wow. What does that mean the average person who plays a lottery spends?
Right.
Because they're saying the average American, not the average American who plays a lottery.
Hmm. For Video Road Log, here's your forecast.
Record-setting high heat continues in the west. Las Vegas today will be at 114 degrees. The forecast high for Los Angeles, 100. Phoenix, 115. Nearing 100 in Portland. San Diego, 90. Five cities in the San Diego forecast area broke heat records, including Palm Springs on Monday, 119 degrees. And over the next 7 days, I don't show any rain for the state of Washington, Oregon, or most of California. Your 5 to 7 day rain totals put the majority of the moisture in Florida, the coastal Carolinas, up through the Delmarva Peninsula, into eastern Pennsylvania, and upstate New York. We'll see just around an inch of rain for the Midwest over the next 7 days, same for the South as well. Add Dallas to the list of cities with triple digits today, 102, Chicago 83, 80 in rain for New York City, a chance of rain in the Big Apple through the weekend. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
Have no fear. Eric Hurley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You see some of the footage of the wildfires over in Greece? Man, unbelievable.
Yeah. Some of the individuals that were fleeing the wildfires actually were sent into the water at one point. To get away.
74 people dead,
almost
200 injured. They don't know how many are missing. That's how fast these things moved.
Spain had sent over some of the large amphibious planes to help battle those fires. And it's just amazing to look at these pictures. Just incredible. Just incredible.
They said worst in a century.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just I saw that. I mean, it's sorry, but when I saw the flames, I'm like, wow, this is hell. That's what that's what hit my mind.
Some of the pictures coming out of the areas where the fire had, you know, moved through and was extinguished in that area, but you're just looking at, you know, just the charred remains of cars and buildings and homes. Tragic. Just amazing.
I want to play this audio here because we had talked about Elizabeth Warren, and why not? Because as you know, we talked about they're already running for president now. I mean, all the interviews they're doing, whether it's Warren or Biden, whatever, Cory Booker, they're all trying to make their mark right now. We had played a little bit of Cory Booker from before. I want to play this interview that she did on CNBC, Elizabeth Warren, as they talk about taxes. Okay, all right, so here we go.
Negotiations are all about. It's
50% obviously too high.
Look, there was a time.
I'm sorry, I got to start from the beginning here. I'm having problems getting to the beginning of the actual interview.
Okay.
Here, and so we'll let me just read it to you because for some reason I can't get it back to the beginning of it, but let me just, I'll read you the transcript. If Democrats take the Congress, if you're in the White House or both, would you like to see the corporate tax repealed? Yeah, I really want to see them rolled back. Back to 35%? Well, it's not about a number.
Really? Yes, it is. What would be your number? It's, I mean, you've got right. a number.
It's not about a number. Here's how I look at budgets and taxes are at the heart of this. A lot of people think they're just numbers. They're not. They are the expression to our value of our values.
No, come on.
The values of the Republican Party that passed these tax cuts are to give $1.5 trillion away to the richest Americans and the biggest corporations and let everyone else pick up the crumbs. Mm-hmm. Now, is that accurate? Is the government giving anybody anything when they have tax cuts?
No. No.
No. So that's inaccurate there. You know, instead of, and this is where we have said, we can't discuss anymore with the other side and expect any integrity. Because right there, it's not about the number. It's about the expression of values. The values of the Republican Party that passed the tax cuts are to give $1.5 trillion away to the richest Americans and the biggest corporations and let everyone else pick up the crumbs. This is the government is giving you money.
Right.
No, it's your money to begin with.
Because if her number were 35, and she's not even going to say 35, remember that. It's not about a number.
But here
well,
we
then
go.
In your case, why wouldn't it be, why would it be just 35? Why would it not be 95?
Here we go back to it. Now, what's too high for a top personal rate?
Mm.
Her answer, quote, it's not about a number.
Uh-huh, right.
That's what negotiations are about.
Negotiations.
Then a question back. Is 50% obviously too high? Answer. That's why you sit down and negotiate over the numbers.
Won't answer.
When George W. Bush was president, his team articulated the view that it was a matter of right and wrong that you shouldn't have more than a third of your income taken. Do you feel similarly that it's wrong for more than half of somebody's marginal income to be taken? Mm. Look, there was a time when a very prosperous America, America that was growing the middle class, an America in which working families were doing better generation after generation, where the top marginal rate was well above 50%. 90%? That's exactly right. But for me, the heart of the question is, and this is what you have to ask, what constitutes a fair share of the economy? It depends in part on what the economy is. Well, we've asked that question and never in my almost 29 years this October of talk radio, I have asked Democrats what a fair share is. I've never received an answer.
Right.
Ever. Not one.
And it depends on what the economy is. So in a recession, she believes that the tax rate should be zero?
I don't know. She didn't answer the question.
Because she won't.
Why not?
Why are you afraid to own it? Right. You have a number in your mind. If everyone were agreeable to you, what would your number be?
Right.
What would your bottom number be?
What is your look, you're the politician. You're the one. You set policy.
You would set policy.
Tell us what your number is.
Well, it was like...
But it's not about numbers. It's about our values.
Uh-huh.
No, it gets down to a number, Elizabeth Warren.
Right. The number represents the value. So what number would represent your values?
But then when you're transracial and mm-hmm. believe that you can believe whatever race you wish to be, mm-hmm. well, then, of course, anything is what you wish to be at the time that you wish to be it, whether it's reality or not.
And remember when she was asked if she would take the test, she said no, because it's what, you know, my family has, you know, believed for a long time. Well, believed or known? I mean, what are you saying?
Jeez.
If you're going to make a claim, then certainly you would want to back that up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially one about yourself.
But if you're going to run for president, people are going to want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you want about Trump. He was specific, 15%.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He was absolutely specific on it. Why can't you? If Trump is so stupid
mm-hmm.
and such a moron as the left believes it is. He was precise on what he wanted in tax policy. Why can't you be, Elizabeth Warren?
Right.
What specifically do you want on tax policy?
It's not about a number. Sure it is.
You're a senator.
It's about values. So what number represents your values?
You know. You're right. You know what the budget is. You know what you want. Mm-hmm. You know what you need to raise in order to pay for what you want. So what should it be?
Right. It's remember when Hillary was in Canada and they were talking about the pipeline.
Oh God!
And she said she wouldn't comment. She was running to become president. She was running for president, and they asked her what she would do if she became president, and she said she didn't want to talk about an ongoing matter. Well, of course you do. That's the whole point of running for president. During the campaign season, you promise people what you'll do about current things.
Well, the fact is Hillary's answer was, I don't want to answer either way, for the fact that my answer might harm my chances of becoming president of the United States.
Yes.
Elizabeth Warren was actually stating, no, this isn't about my values at all. If I tell the American public what I really wish to do with the tax system, they would never consider me for president of the United States. I, Elizabeth Warren, as you know, I will lie about my heritage. I will lie about my DNA. And of course, I cannot tell you what I really think and how I really expect to run this country, because if I did, you wouldn't vote me in. My heritage has to be a lie. My life has to be a lie. What I would do as president has to be a lie. Otherwise, you wouldn't elect me.
But after the election,
tell me where I'm wrong.
After the election, she'll have more flexibility.
Yes, yes.
As Barack Obama told Medvedev.
Well, look, I have to take it no other way.
Right.
Because I want answers from my politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we demand the answers from Trump just like we do Elizabeth Warren.
Sure.
Have you heard last hour?
Well, what's she going to say during a debate?
Right.
It's about our morals and values. Great. What number represents your morals and values? Minimum. What's the lowest you think it should be? What would your aim be? What would you like to see ultimately, assuming everyone on Capitol Hill believed the way you believe and you would win and there were no negotiations, all you had to do was say it and make it so?
If you believe that America wants socialism, be honest about socialism.
Yes.
Well, that's what we're told, that Americans increasingly and young people want socialism. Well, then be honest about the cost of socialism to the individual.
How do they expect to win?
I mean, to the young socialists out there, isn't that what you want?
Right.
If you're a young socialist, that's what we're told. The young people, if you're a young person listening, we're told you're a socialist. Don't you want to know the true cost to what it's going to be for you?
Right.
Or do you want to be BS'd? Is my dad right? That people really want to be BS. They want to be told one thing, and they really don't want to be told they want to be told what the benefits are and not what the costs are.
Right.
Is Dad right?
No, he is, because
Americans really wish to be BS'd?
Remember when they were going to try and do single payer in California, but one lawmaker basically had to shut it down because it had no funding mechanism.
Yeah. And you got death threats.
Yes.
It was the head of the assembly, I believe.
Right. We can't possibly go forward with this until we define how we're going to pay for it.
No, BS us. Don't tell us the truth. Lie to us. Please lie to us. Don't inform us. Just say you're going to do it. Let us live in this magical fairyland where things just happen and the money grows on trees. Just promise of everything, but don't tell us the reality of what kind of society it would actually create.
Yeah.
And after that, I can only say two words.
Mm.
We're doomed.
We are.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Glenn in Los Angeles. Glenn, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
My comment is that all these little snowflakes and millennials that want to have a socialist society here, let's send them on field trips to Cuba and Venezuela.
Yeah.
And then remind them that Margaret Thatcher said it best when she said, socialism is a wonderful idea till you run out of other people's money.
Yep. Well, and that's why, and thanks so much, Glenn. You know, when Eric talked about in your state, in California, when they wanted to pass the single-payer system, and the head of the assembly said, well, no, I'm not going to let this bill go to the floor because there's no funding mechanism. He got death threats and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the liberals wish to live in a fantasy world.
Right.
And so we have asked this question, but they wish to live in a fantasy world because people like Elizabeth Warren wish to keep them in the fantasy world. Be honest. Tell the American public what it's going to cost to live in the socialist utopia.
Right.
Not just the rich. Not just what you're going to tax the rich. What it's going to cost to fund completely for the individuals. Remember Obamacare, how many people stated, how many loyal Democrats, well, I thought there's going to increase, the cost of health care is going to increase. I didn't think it was going to be me. I don't like this now.
Right. Well, it's as if, you know, they really do want to pretend that it's an open store with no cashier. Just walk in, fill the cart, and walk out. Someone is going to have to pay for it.
So explain it to us. Don't hide it. Elizabeth Warren doesn't want to tell you what she would do as president or what she believes as senator tax policy should be, because she believes it would be harder for her to win the next election,
yeah,
which might be the election of president of the United States. So her whole point is, I'm not going to tell you what I actually believe because
right,
it would hurt me. Think right about that. I can't imagine running for political office and not telling people exactly everything that I believed,
mm-hmm,
because that's my whole point. I want to tell you what I believe,
mm-hmm,
because I think that people would look at it and say, yeah, we think that's a pretty good idea. And if they don't, well, then so be it. I'm not going to become a politician and do what I don't want to do. If you believe you have the moral high ground, if you believe you have integrity behind you, and you have morality behind you, then promote exactly what you believe and promote the truth about what it's going to cost. Elizabeth Warren can't do that. Why? Because she knows, or she believes, the American public won't accept what she wants this country to become.
Why would you want to be president? Why in the world would you want to run for office if you believe that if by going out and promoting what you believe in will not get you elected?
<I know. laughs>
Why would you even have any interest?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.